Welcome, Red Ice members. It's great to have you with us, and thank you for tuning in to Hour 2 with Alfred Weber. We're having a really, really interesting conversation about the LCROSS mission, the NASA space program, and what they're doing here in October, and the bombing with this kinetic weapon that we've been talking about. We've been talking about secret space programs as well, and human activity, and alien ET activity on the moon. Also Mars, actually. And I want to begin this segment here to ask you a little bit about the secret space program, what the humans might be up to. And if you think that there is any activity specifically that we know about in regards to the South Pole, where the first bombing is targeted at, do you think there's any kind of human basis activity there, or ET basis specifically, that has been talked about by some of these eyewitness testimonies that you mentioned in the first hour, Alfred?
Well, yes. I have been contacted by researchers who have stated that, i.e., we don't have firm evidence, but I will give you the nature of the conversation. And that is that, there are some researchers who are stating, and they're not willing to go on the record, but who are stating that there is some evidence that this area in the South Pole may have been an old shadow government base. Hmm. That is an old base of the secret space program, which the U.S. wants to eliminate, as there would be vulnerability to viewing it by some of the powers like China, India, Japan, and the European Space Agency, who are now planning moon missions.
Yes.
I don't know how much weight to put on that, because if you're part of the shadow government and you wanted to eliminate a moon base, well, you would do so with one of the shadow government's spacecraft. It would be much easier. So I don't know how much weight to put on that. Just a comment now about the secret space program, which there appear to be, from the evidence, and UK researcher Gary McKinnon,
yes,
who is now at vulnerability of being extradited to the U.S. for 80 years, has provided some corroborating evidence when he discovered whole lists of non-terrestrial officers in the U.S., that is, officers of the U.S. Armed Forces who are assigned to duties off-planet.
Yes.
And so that the secret space program, and all of this is financed, by the way, by what we call the black budget, which your listeners are probably familiar with, but
yes, yes,
through a mechanism in various acts that were passed in the early 50s, there's a huge numbers of funds which are siphoned off from civilian agencies and from other illicit areas like the international drug trade, which finances a black budget, which part of the black budget is apparently, by the evidence, a secret space navy of anti-gravitic spacecraft, which the U.S. or some supranational authority now operates, and which may include interstellar craft, and that is craft that can travel beyond our solar system and perhaps outside of our galaxy. There are about between 200 and 400 billion stars, solar systems in our galaxy, and our galaxy is 100 million light years across.
Yeah, yeah.
So that gives you an idea of the stakes that we're talking about. But of course, if you're traveling via wormholes, you can travel these distances in a reasonable time from a human point of view.
Yeah.
The second part of the space program, which now we have multiple whistleblower testimonies to, both from Henry Deacon and from Andrew D. Bashago, and from other witnesses that you can, if your listeners go to projectcamelot.org, they can find out more. And this secret space program uses a teleportation technology, which is developed from the science of Nikola Tesla.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this teleportation technology, we have evidence of that there are at least we know of from whistleblower testimony, we know that there are U.S. secret bases on Mars, and that there's a teleportation corridor between the U.S. and Mars.
Alfred, sorry to cut you off, but I want to ask you a little bit of what do you think is some of the activity that goes on here? I know that there was a pretty interesting story in regards to mining and so forth, and you mentioned this a little bit before, of course, but apparently what I've heard, there's three people who own the mineral rights to both on Mars and on the moon. I think they're Joseph Resnick, Timothy O'Neill, and Guy Kramer. Don't know if you heard about that or if you think it's true or not, but do you think that there could be some kind of business deal going on here, or is this something completely different that we're talking about, why they would have what you term off-world officers, so to speak?
Well, that's a very interesting angle. According to the Outer Space Treaty, the legality of those mineral rights would be extremely questionable, as would the legality of any mineral rights that would have been granted on the moon. So I haven't seen that particular story, but it certainly is within the realm of possibility. I've heard from the two whistleblowers, Mr. Bashago and Henry Deacon.
Mm-hmm.
We've heard two different accounts of the different activities. One, Mr. Deacon, that's not his real name.
Sure.
Reports that he has teleported to Mars once for a meeting. I don't know how many times he's gone, but at least the one time that he spoke about on video, and that video was produced by Project Camelot. So you can go to projectcamelot.org. It was filmed at the Exopolitics Summit in Barcelona, so it may not be up, but it should be up soon.
Yes.
What he states is that he teleported to Mars for a one-hour meeting. It sounded like a meeting of an administrative nature on some sort of joint project, and that there were members of the Martian civilization who he describes as being human, just like us. That is, the Martian civilization is human. And I like to put.
Sorry to cut you off, but does that mean that they are us, or that we are them, or is it just that we actually are two different civilizations, but we look the same? Or what do you think is going on?
Yeah, this is, yeah, thank you for asking that. This is our best surmise of the case, people can go to extrapolitics.com, and there are over 30 documents there that can be downloaded with regard to the civilization both on the surface of Mars and underneath Mars. Our analysis shows that, and incidentally, the last quarter of our book, Exopolitics, deals with the intelligent civilization under the surface of Mars. So that's a case study that we used in developing Exopolitics.
Mm-hmm.
Both Earth and Mars appear to be having been affected seriously by the solar system catastrophe of 9500 BC, at which time there's good evidence to state that a fragment of the Vela supernova came into the solar system. Some of the fragments destroying the surface ecology of Mars and crashing into it, making it an oblong planet.
Hmm.
And so the intelligent civilization under the surface of Mars are the survivors of that catastrophe. And from what we know now from the Mars rover Spirit photographs, the surface of Mars is a post-collapse ecology with various types of humanoids on it, with and many, many different species of animals. Kind of a very, very dangerous and desolate place to be.
Mm-hmm.
But humans can breathe on the surface of Mars. There is a very thin atmosphere there.
Mm.
It's like about being at about 14,000 feet. If you're on Earth, on top of a mountain, or on a 14,000 foot plateau.
Alfred, go ahead.
Yeah. The 9500 BC solar system catastrophe also collided with Earth and destroyed our great maritime civilization of that time, which Plato called Atlantis.
Mm.
And we on Earth now are actually in a post-collapse, a post-catastrophe civilization. The supernova Vela did not destroy Earth to the same extent that it did Mars.
Mm.
But it destroyed our great maritime civilization, and we have been in recovery ever since.
Hmm. That's a very interesting point. Yeah.
Yeah, and one of the reasons why Earth's civilization may be so violent, that is, there are 150 wars going on our planet at any single time, may have to do because that catastrophe is ingrained in our very DNA, in our makeup,
yes,
and in our collective memory.
Yes.
So that we have what researcher Barbara Hand Cloud calls catastrophobia.
Hmm.
And it's like the theory we're in a collective state of post-traumatic disorder, and with a lot of lateral violence taking place.
Mm-hmm.
So that may be one reason, among others, why we have such a violent society. But now, with the resumption of relations between the intelligent civilization that lives under the surface of Mars, which we know from the 1971 data provided by Mr. Bashago of his meetings at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, then this represents a reunification of what was a unitary society, apparently, prior to the rupture caused by the cataclysm of 9500 BC.
I see what you mean. Really? So we're reconstructing things again, or at least these agencies are. NASA is interested in this, right?
Yes. Now, and so now they're doing it at a secret level.
Yeah, exactly.
And so what we're saying is that this secrecy should end, and these relationships and the secret space program should be made public, because it's all being paid for through taxpayer funds, and because it's a matter of public policy now what the U.S. relationship, what Earth's relationship toward Mars should be, should be a matter of public debate and democratic policymaking, because we have now, and we know through the photographs of NASA, that the surface ecology of Mars is very fragile, and that the humanoid forms and the animal forms could be drastically affected by these programs. And all of these issues should be debated publicly. So that's our position. And so we're seeking, as I mentioned before, that President Barack Obama, who Mr. Bashago met in 1980 as a student in Los Angeles, when both of them were students, Mr. Obama was in Columbia then. He had just entered into Columbia University and was back for a visit. And he was actually then being trained to be a future president of the United States, because he told Mr. Bashago in 1980 that he was going to be a future president.
Did he say how he knew that then, or was he, what happened there?
Well, our postulate is that part of the secret time travel, time-space program, is that the U.S. has acquired and control, has acquired the ability to try to, for time travel teleportation. And Mr. Bashago announced this at conferences this spring in California and in the state of Washington, here in the U.S. And it apparently is a formula by which future U.S. presidents, such as George W. Bush, George H.W. Bush, his father, William Jefferson Clinton, and now Barack Obama, have been pre-identified by the secret U.S. authorities as future U.S. presidents. And so they are trained and briefed in an extensive program to carry out that office on behalf of the secret government.
So they're trained ahead of time, so to speak. And I mean, I must, in that regard, if they indeed have access to a time machine, pretty much, then I mean, we are we are screwed, if you think about it from a...
Well, the power that would imply?
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, no. There's good evidence that you can characterize all of these presidents, Clinton, the two Bushes, and Obama, as lifetime longitudinal intelligence assets.
Yeah, that's right.
And there is evidence that the time travel capability, and this evidence comes from the statements of Mr. Bushago, who was a subject in these experiments, that the time travel has been used for purposes of political surveillance and political planning.
Among other things, I'd reckon this is just one level of how to control events here on Earth, and then you expand that further even into the solar system, because again, it feels to me then that this is would be pretty much the ultimate secret to that they would try to want to keep the lid on, so to speak, because if it is indeed true that there is an advanced civilization on Mars, which is, you know, pretty much we are them, or we're the same species here, and they're trying to put the piece, the puzzle back together, piece this back together, so to speak, then they definitely probably will want to have access to this information solely themselves. You know what I mean? They don't want to do this openly and share this with people, right?
Yes, yes, right. This is a new technology that has been acquired that should be used ethically and for the benefit of humanity, but in fact has been used for purposes of political intelligence and governance, which may not be entirely ethical. If one looks, for example, at the election of George W. Bush in the year 2000, in which actually Al Gore won, but through the time travel information, the Bush forces were probably able to subvert and corrupt many institutions within the U.S. in order to enforce their will. Mm-hmm. Now, we don't know exactly what the capabilities of the time travel technology are, and whether it extends off planet. We do have information that it is accurate on planet, and that it has two forms. One is chronovision, which is like a television set to which you can dial to any point in the time-space coordinates from your own time-space coordinates, so you can go backwards and forwards in time, or there's also an actual time travel machine in which one can teleport to actual locations in the future or in the past in our time-space hologram. But exactly what the technical capabilities are at present is not known, it's because we depend on whistleblowers for this information because they're highly secret.
That's right. I want to ask you if you know that if Andrew D. Bushago is available. Does he do interviews at all and things like this?
Yes.
He does, huh?
Yes. Yeah. I'd be happy to give you his contact information once we're off the air and
Absolutely.
You can contact him.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. We definitely want to try to get him on. But so where do you see this is where is this going then? Are they on a time limit or timetable themselves? What do you think is the goal here, so to speak, if we talk about what they're doing, you know, in regards to bombing Moon and so forth. Yeah. Tell us about it.
Well, one historian has coined a term, the breakaway civilization. And I think that that's a good term to describe what the black budget economy has done, the black budget permanent war economy. And that is that they've used these technologies together with secrecy, together with false flag operations like 9/11 to impose a state of war, permanent war here on the planet, as well as a domestic police state around the world. And they themselves have broken away into a civilization which is now perhaps colonizing Mars and looking forward to colonizing other planets within our solar system through teleportation. And using its secret anti-gravitic fleet to go throughout the world. And now you've mentioned this issue of the mineral rights on Mars and the Moon.
Yes.
So all of these things are extra constitutional and illegal. However, it's an illegality which the breakaway civilization has now arrogated law unto itself and is we in the normal surface civilization are only learning of these things, and there's good evidence that there are serious plans underway, perhaps, for the depopulation of our surface human civilization through various schemes, including depleted uranium, the weaponization of food, the weaponization of vaccines, weapon systems like HARP, which include chemtrails as its atmospheric component. All of these are weapon systems which are being carried out in order to depopulate the surface human civilization.
Why do you think that's being done, Alfred? What's the motive for that?
Well, this is where it gets to be very speculative, because we don't have good data on it because of the great secrecy. And that is that we know for sure that at the early Bilderberger meetings in 1952 and 53, the Bilderbergers having been brought into existence by the CIA, having organized its first meetings on behalf of what we call the black nobility of Europe, that is the things like the throne of England and the throne of Holland.
From the Venetian bloodlines, I think, yes.
Yeah, and which are very satanically oriented and into kind of the black magic realms, as well as the City of London and Wall Street banking interests, which are ruled in Europe by the Rothschild family, whose net worth is $100 trillion.
There you go.
And these come from detailed estimates. And the Wall Street being ruled by the Rockefeller Group, which is the U.S., the North American contractor for the Rothschilds. So at a human level, there's a case to be made that the depopulation policy was first enunciated through the Bilderbergers. Then there's researchers and this is where it gets extremely speculative, that claim that there's a layer behind this that goes to negative extraterrestrials, including negative reptilians that inhabit the fourth dimension. We're kind of in the third dimension here,
mm-hmm.
but negative reptilian extraterrestrials that have manufactured one element of the small grays, who have conducted the abductions here. Now, what I just said is very controversial.
Indeed.
And does not have clear evidence.
Hmm.
There are some researchers like Dr. Stephen Greer, who claims that no abductions are done by extraterrestrials. They are all done by secret intelligence units known as MILAB, military abductions.
Yes.
There are other researchers who claim that only a small portion of the abductions are done by MILABs, but the large portion are done by reptilians and grays. Now, we have very sketchy information on this. It is highly, highly controversial. You mentioned reptilians and grays. That's a subject which most people in the exopolitics area, research area, do not want to deal with.
I
think that if the reptilians and grays are a factor and do exist, well, that is the essence of exopolitics. If in fact there's a race of extraterrestrials that has a negative intent toward human beings. But at the very least, we can establish that the depopulation policy was enunciated at the early Bilderberger meetings.
And do you, if we talk a little bit more about, the reptilians and so forth, do you think that they might be, as suggested by some researchers, that are in controls of these events that are playing out on the Earth, that they might be interested in, let's say, colonize Earth themselves, so they need to get rid of the humans on the surface levels, just as you talked about. Could that be the case here?
Yeah, that's a model which is put forth by researchers such as Laura Knight Jadzik in her book High Strangeness, and she maintains in that book, as do other researchers who have written books along the same vein, there is a genetic experimentation going on in the abductions to create a new race of humans that and a depopulation of the current Homo sapiens in order to create a situation where the reptilian amphibians can coexist on Earth with that new race of humans, because
that's a frightening idea. Do you think it's true, or do you think it's valid?
I maintain a position of agnosticism here, but I really want to examine all of the evidence, because I'm not certain that the human hypothesis accounts for all of the evidence behind depopulation, and I'm not certain that all of the abduction evidence can be explained by military abductions, as Dr. Greer seems to think. But what the totality of the view is, I'm not certain. I should add that we appear to be in an ecology of dimensions here, such that there are upper dimensional ethical dimensions civilizations, extraterrestrial, hyperdimensional civilizations, and even Laura Knight Jasek in her book High Strangeness maintains that the upper dimensionals are really helping us behind the scenes, and that the so that we have strategic allies here.
And, you know, maybe you can talk a little bit more about this idea also that the human beings are being changed or altered or in some kind of genetic manipulation is going on, because I think that that is true. That's what we're seeing actually right now. The question is then what's the purpose of that? Is it to change or alter the human being, or is it simply to, you know, make it disappear, make it sick, so to speak? What do you think about that?
Yeah. Okay. So I think that there are a number of questions in your question, and that it's very important to make distinctions here so that people do not go away with a fear-based point of view.
Good point.
First of all, it is true that our basic DNA is being changed, and for the better. Right now, about 3% of our DNA is active, and the other 97% is considered junk, quote-unquote junk DNA.
Yes.
And good evidence. In fact, this was the subject of my presentation at the Exopolitics Summit in Spain, at the center of our galaxy, science has now proven that there's a massive black hole, about 4 million times as dense as the sun, which rotates once every 11 minutes and which acts as basically a motor for our galaxy. Mm. At the material level, it creates the new suns and the new solar systems and the celestial material. At other levels, it is operating directly on our DNA. What is occurring now, according to many researchers, is that the emanations from the galactic center, and this will be occurring in more frequency as we begin to reach the solar maximum, which will occur in 2012 to 2013, is that the emanations from the galactic center will actually be acting as a genetic enhancer.
Really?
Yes. So in order to expand our ability as humans to interact with the rest of intelligent civilizations. Now, this is concurrent to any plan that the forces of the permanent war economy may have in terms of the genetic program that we talked about, or in terms of a deep depopulation program.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's because we have an information war going on now, and it may be that the combined forces of the galactic center black hole and its operations on our genome of a positive nature, together with upper dimensional extraterrestrial civilizations, which are acting on our behalf, that they are actually creating a positive future for us, such that we will be moving out of the permanent war economy into a sustainable economy.
Yeah.
And that any plans that may have existed, which we can't totally prove, but which writers such as Professor David Jacobs of the University of Pennsylvania and Bud Hopkins and others write about, mm-hmm. In terms of the reptilian gray plans, that those will be defeated and will not be able to become actual realities. So we're at a very kind of important watershed in humanity in these years, whereby we have the ability, by tuning into the galactic center, and there's research by a researcher named Spottiswoode, who lives in Palo Alto, California, who has shown that our individual psychic capacity increases by 400% at the time each day when we're most aligned with the galactic center. So that these are all of the various factors in this very rich, complex dynamic that we're involved in, where we're actually co-creating a positive future with the galaxy itself and with upper dimensional extraterrestrials who are acting as our strategic allies.
It's really, really interesting. And, you know, as you speak here, I'm thinking a little bit about, to me, it sounds like it's definitely a tug of war, I think they call it, going on here then. And the human race is the central point of this, that it seems to be that one side wants to control us for their agenda, so to speak. They want to try to change us and maybe even colonize the planet or change it in some way. And on the other hand, there seems to be a natural kind of evolution, if you will, then going on in regards to the what the cosmos is emanating in regards to to radiation and frequency. Is that right?
Yes, and that's why that forms the basis for objectively realizing and objectively participating in a positive human future. Even though it's right in the midst of all of the breakdown, which is just a transitory phenomenon from the old paradigm to a new universe-based paradigm.
Really interesting. And maybe you guys can briefly tell us about what do you think the grays are again? Then do you think that they are, I've heard theories that they are, a human cloned, kind of biological robot, if you will, or then, do you think it's more true that they are a similar designed race of beings, but by someone else, not from this planet? What do you think, Alfred?
I think that the both of those statements may be true. Dr. Greer talks about the grays as being a programmed life form created by the permanent work economy on the secret side of the terrestrial forces. These are the small grays. I believe that there's research which may show that the small grays are both programmed life forms and that the small grays may also be created by some branch of the extraterrestrials, possibly a negative branch of the reptilians. But I don't believe that there's a definitive answer at this stage. I believe that abduction research needs to be taken much more seriously and needs to be put out in public, because In recent public opinion polls, the Roper poll of 2002 2% of the American population thought that they had been abducted. That's 6 million people.
Really? 6 million, huh? So we have definitely an interesting scenario, so to speak, going on here. Something is happening on this planet, that's for sure. And if we talk about weaponization of space again, like the Star Wars program, for instance, and ask what the reason for that might be, and how do you see that plays into this other kind of agenda of I at least see that there's dark forces on this Earth right now trying to combat and prevent this kind of natural evolution and progress that you're talking about. And do you at all tie in this idea of weaponization of space into that, or do you think that that's an ulterior motive here?
Yes. If your listeners go to peaceinspace.com or peaceinspace.org, they will see the newest version of the Space Preservation Treaty. And the Space Preservation Treaty is very comprehensive. And one of its main principal focuses is on banning space-based weapons of mass destruction, such as HAARP. And HAARP involves weaponizing a natural system of the Earth, namely the ionosphere, which is that portion of the upper atmosphere which is very close to space. It can be considered part of space. The weaponized ionosphere is the space-based component of HAARP. The atmosphere-based component are the chemtrails, which magnify the effects of HAARP on going down to the planet, and is also a binary weapon system. For example, there was testimony from a Project Camelot witness that one of the components in chemtrails now was a precursor to the H1N1 virus.
That's right.
Which would be activated by the vaccinations. So that chemtrails are a delivery system for weapons. And the ground-based component of HAARP are disguised as research facilities that are just researching the upper atmosphere. And so HAARP can be used as a mass mind control weapon on Earth. It can be used for tectonic warfare, earthquake warfare on Earth. It can be used for weather warfare on Earth. It can also be used and directed as kinetic electromagnetic warfare against ethical extraterrestrial craft.
Really, no.
So it has all of these multiple uses, and is a principal weapon system. It's an invisible weapon system because the mainstream media will not report this, and the mainstream media will not report chemtrails, nor will any legislation on Earth or any parliament or Congress deal with chemtrails, or the legislators that propose that will lose their positions or be discredited, as has happened. So there are a variety of exotic space-based weapons and other weapons that the secret government, the breakaway civilization, has to carry out warfare with upper-dimensional ethical extraterrestrial civilizations, and to carry out warfare also against the human population that lives in the surface, terrestrial civilization.
Yes.
So this is a matrix which I think that everyone at present should be conscious of and should understand that we are in a shooting war, not because we're seeking it, but because the secret breakaway civilization of the permanent war economy is holding us hostage, if not trying to eliminate us.
Yeah, yeah. So do you think that this the breakaway government that you talk about, do you think that they have a... What do you think is their motive again, if we talk about that a little bit? Is it just simply the control of the planet, again, going back to resources, minerals, or whatnot? And if it is true that they are human beings, to me, that just would suggest that leading forces, so to speak, or people within this breakaway government are manipulated or controlled in some way. What can you say about that?
Yes. I would expand that definition to hold that the breakaway civilization is no longer primarily based on Earth.
Uh-huh.
It may be based in space. It may be based in other solar systems. It may be based in other planets on this solar system, such as Mars. And that from this base, this civilization has gone forth in a secretive and warlike way, and may no longer identify with this planet in that deeper way, and may no longer identify with what it is to be human.
Mm.
Certainly, events like 9/11, like the Iraq War, like the Afghanistan War, like the use of depleted uranium weapons, which is poisoning the DNA of the entire planet because it's distributed throughout the planet by the trade winds and the westerlies, and it only takes 14 days from depleted uranium that is exploded in Iraq to reach the North American continent, and it reaches Europe within 7 days. This is a, we are, our entire planet as a living biosystem is being targeted by the permanent war economy. Now you can say that that is human, and that the human component of this, the elite component of this, may have reached, we know that they have reached secret treaties with the Greys in the early 1950s. In which advanced technologies, which are applied to military uses, were exchanged in order for the right to abduct persons, abduct individuals in the mainstream population.
Yes.
So we're dealing with a breakaway civilization that is operating contrary to universal law, contrary to international law, and is, I would say, something of a pirate civilization that now controls resources, but one cannot identify it as being of this planet. I think it has extended itself beyond this planet.
Hmm. There's just so much more that we obviously can talk about and touch upon here, and with having said that, I'd love to have you back at some point and touch upon some of the things that we don't have time for this time around,
great,
of course. But I do want to ask you one final question here, and that's, I guess, a little bit tying in this idea about solar activity, the peak around 2012, 13, something like that, and if your general outlook on this is positive, do you think that we will succeed, so to speak, in this and actually manage to throw off these negative forces that you're talking about, or do you have a more dark view on the future years coming up here?
Yeah. No, I think that there are at least three cycles which will positively contribute to a human transformation of a positive nature. And these are a galactic cycle that we're going through. In 1980, the plane of our solar system started to intersect the plane of the black hole at the center of the galaxy. It will be a 36-year process that will finish in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
We're also on a concurrent 77-million-year cycle when new species appear spontaneously. We're also on a cycle involving the time acceleration matrix, which is an adaptation of the Mayan calendar by Dr. Carl Johan Kalman and Barbara Ann Clow.
Mm-hmm.
And in, say, from 1999 to the beginning of 2011 has been a galactic era, because that's what the black hole at the center of the galaxy is programming. And at the beginning of 2011, it will shift over to a
universal
era,
yes,
of cosmic non-dualistic consciousness. And also, we're in the solar cycle 24, where in 2012-2013, we'll be at the solar maximum, and the index of human excitability, which goes back to 500 BC, has shown by correlation that 80% of wars, revolutions, the settling of basic social issues happens during the solar maximum, which will be 2012 to 2013. So that's a time when humanity in a positive way can really move to settle its basic issues.
Mm-hmm.
So my view is that with these positive cosmic cycles, with the aid of the upper dimensional extraterrestrials, and with a human population, which by the 2002 Robe Poll is 85% congruent with the extraterrestrial presence, I think we have a positive future ahead.
Well, that's wonderful news in that regard, and I would agree with you there, Alfred. And as I mentioned here, we'd love to have you back soon. And again, thank you very much for coming on Red Ice Radio. Again, the book is called Exopolitics, Politics, Government, and Law in the Universe. Tell people about your websites one final time, and also how people can get a copy of your book.
Yes, our website is exopolitics.com, and you can get the book there at exopolitics.com or at amazon.com.
And again, we will have these links up on redicecreations.com. Thank you very much for this second hour, Alfred.
Thank you very much.
That's our very interesting program with Alfred Weber from Exopolitics. Thank you for keeping an eye and ear on redicecreations.com, and of course for subscribing. Upcoming next on the show, we have David Icke, Freeman, Catherine Austin Fritz, Rand Flemouth, Freddy Silva, and we hope to have Bob Dean with us soon. My thanks to Fredrik and Elizabeth for their work on Red Ice, and to Marie over at our new Red Ice Radio YouTube channel. My name is Henrik. Take good care of yourself, and we'll be back before you know it. Bye-bye.